Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. This time I'm speaking with creative director and president of Athens Kallithea, Ted Philippakos. Ted's work and its footprint on the football landscape needs little, if any, introduction. It's what lies beneath this which forms the basis of our conversation, as he shares the impact of childhood holidays to his ancestral home of Greece, the world of possibility they opened his eyes to, and how those formative years provide the foundation of much of the work we see from him today. A foundation of community, connection, and just wanting to make things a little better.
Hey, Joe, can you hear me?
Yeah, got you good, mate. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really good. It's never been more apparent that we're in two different seasons and countries than this screenshot here now.
Why is that?
You're looking very sun-kissed, very healthy. and I've already got the British moon tan of winter going on.
We have, we've had an extended summer for sure over here.
Yeah, it looks like you've been making the most of it.
Well, football helps as well. I mean, I try to go to training just about every day. So I'm out there in the sun and yeah.
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah.
How's the day started for you over there today?
It's fine. Pretty typical. Football training and then, well, I wouldn't say typical. I mean, every day is different for managing a football club, but things are pretty good. Yeah.
There's a lot to cover. Or a lot that I'm curious about. Most of that will be around your work in Europe, the obvious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be good for me, or I'm interested to get a picture of what your relationship with football looked like back in the day and how that's kind of influenced your pathway in it.
Actually, it was recently that I was first asked about that, about my, you know, childhood relationship to football. For whatever reason, I had never been asked before. Which is kind of frustrating, as a matter of fact, as an aside, because, you know, people want to talk about jerseys or something like that, as if it's like, you know, a kind of superficial thing. And there's so much storytelling that goes behind that. It's so much deeper than I think what people perceive, certainly not just the commercial activity. And I was glad to get that question recently. And I, what I said was, I think all my work right now, can be traced back to my childhood relationship to football, in several different ways. But, you know, so I grew up in New York. My father was born and raised in Athens, you know, so I grew up physically distant from my heritage in some way. And, it was also a time in America where, well, I'm 42 years old. So we're talking about like coming of age, like still a little bit pre-internet, you know, and football wasn't really available to us on television so much. So it was actually like, family trips to Athens when I was like, starting out when I was like 11, 12, 13, where I first discovered like world football at large. And I mean, it was something that I was immediately like swept up in, captured by. And there were kind of like a couple of different aspects to that. There was, I was mostly reading like English football magazines that were being imported by, you know, like Greek newsstands and stuff like that. So I was reading like When Saturday Comes and 442 and just kind of like devouring these magazines and like really just falling in love with not just the game itself, but people's passion around it, you know, which was communicated through magazines like that. And so it was kind of like, a passport into a whole, like a whole new world opened up to me, right? And, you know, and then you go back to, and you go back home, and I'm like, you know, living in New York, and football became a way for me to kind of like maintain this connection to, you know, as I said, it opened up the world in a certain way, but it also gave me a direct connection to my heritage, a direct connection to Greece. I started following Panathinaikos, which was my father's team. And I had the good fortune of growing up in a period where it was kind of like a golden era for the club. They were especially competitive in Europe. One of my earliest memories is watching them reach the Champions League semifinals, beating Ajax in Amsterdam 1-0, and then unfortunately losing the second leg. Watching them go to two consecutive European quarterfinals, beating Barcelona, but then losing at Camp Nou. The next year, losing against Mourinho's Porto. And like, that was everything to me. That was like, you know, watching those teams do that was kind of pride in where I came from and like a connection to like a group of people and this feeling of like, you know, here's this relatively small, okay, sure, Panathinaikos is a big club in, you know, in certain respects, but, you know, compared to these clubs that I've referenced, I mean, we were playing against, you know, beat Arsenal once, beat Barcelona once, beat Juventus once. And it's kind of like, makes you feel like, wow, it was inspiring to think that anything is possible. And like, football was a kind of a facet of life where it kind of taught you that lesson, you know, that anything is possible at a very young age. And those lessons are at the foundation of everything I do right now. Aside from being, you know, a Panathinaikos supporter, I, as I said, I was, you know, just kind of like crazy about, you know, English and Italian football. I mean, that was like the dawn of the Premier League. Obviously, it was an exciting time. And Italy was just incredible those days. And so like, the way the game looked and felt those days is what's still in my heart. I don't see it anymore. And that's a whole other conversation. It's something that's kind of heartbreaking to me. And so I think another part of my work is just trying to like recapture the feelings I had about football, like at that time, and try to like, trying to bring it forward to the present day.
That feeling that you're mentioning there, would you describe it as a loss of the purity at the top level?
Yeah. I mean, today we are at a point of unprecedented economic and competitive disparity in European football. I don't think I need to explain to you all the ways that that has manifested, but I mean, as one reference point, like, let's just go back to what I was saying a moment ago about my team, Panathinaikos. I mean, like they, you know, even if they were doing everything right in terms of the way they developed players and the way they were investing in the market and, the right coaches and the right trainers and the right leadership and just, and everything broke their way. That there's just no way that in modern football, they could be as competitive as they once were, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It's just not possible. I understand, you know, Olympiacos nicked a win from West Ham a week ago and Ajax beat Brighton, but like, you know, I mean, these days in Greece, those feel like monumental achievements and we kind of recognize like it's not going to happen every week. Whereas, you know, going back 15, 20 years, I don't want to just focus on Greece. I mean, but like Greek clubs used to compete with, if you were the champion of Greece, the game was structured in a way where like, you know, you could have a competitive match with, you know, a top club from another European country. And, you know, put simply, money has obviously changed that, but also the structure of European football has changed that. And even besides Greece, I mean, like, You know, we turned clubs like, you know, the top Dutch clubs and the top Portuguese clubs into selling clubs. They should be competing for trophies, like directly.
It's almost disrespectful to their heritage and their impact on the game, isn't it? That they've turned into breeding farms, essentially.
Right. And so what was lost there? I mean, what was lost goes a lot deeper than, okay, well, some of the top clubs of, you know, coming from countries outside the top five aren't going to be as competitive. You know, their fans will not have the same successes, you know, as they once did. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, man, like for me, as I said before about like football being this kind of sociocultural force, like it's, I feel like that's a public good that you can't take away from people. Right. So once you introduce a kind of like elitism into it, that's going against like exactly what this whole thing is supposed to be about.
I'm aware I'm skipping a lot of steps with what I'm about to ask, and some of those steps might be important in terms of how you answer. But I'm just basing this on how I've felt in certain areas as I hit 40. You're 42. You've been involved with Athens Kalithia since 2021. So that's around your 40th birthday, give or take. Is there any part of this, for want of a better word, venture? I don't want to play it down. But is there any part of this that is you reaching a point in life where you're nostalgic for the feelings and passion of youth, and you've gone in search of that, in search of lost time almost?
Nostalgia is the theme that runs through all of my work for sure, in general. You know, I mean, like everything from, you know, the way we try to tell stories, the way we, you know, design kits, bringing back long sleeve jerseys, like so much of it is is a nod to the past. They're trying to marry the past with the present. But I think you said something about like recapturing youth in a certain way or something like that. And I think what's cool about this project is, my brother and I grew up in New York with these pretty wild, like, European football dreams. We were both in a very, like, pure, beautiful way, like, in love with the game and wanted to be a part of it in some way. My brother's path was obvious from the time he was young. He was going to be a footballer, and he ended up playing in Greece for 10 years, whereas I knew I wasn't going to be quite good enough to do that, and I was going to have to find another way. And I think we both kind of realized that where we ended up is kind of like a miracle. I mean, there are some Americans sprinkled through European football these days, but it wasn't really like that when we were growing up. There was no Y Scout. There was no internet. There was no respect for the American player, really. It kind of like didn't make sense that you would go from New York to, you know, his first club was AEK Athens. He ended up on Olympiakos. It was just kind of a dream that happened. And, you know, the same for me. I mean, like I have this kind of funny story that I tell people sometimes of like one of my first girlfriends happened to be this Italian girl. And when I got introduced to her older brother, she's like, oh, tell him what you want to do, like when you grow up or whatever. And I was kind of bashful and I got, you know, kind of pushed into answering. I was like, oh, I would love to, you know, work in Italian football one day. And his answer was kind of like, yeah, good luck with that. <You know? Yeah>. And like, I felt stupid even saying it. And the fact that that happened somehow, I mean, like, is hard to explain. And so bringing it back to like what my brother and I are doing now, like, you know, what we're doing is really difficult. We took over a club that the season prior had been in third division of Greece, which is a really low level. We had two players on the roster, one employee in the club. We really had to build everything from zero. And it's been a lot of work, and any football season has its ups and downs. We missed promotion to the first division by 1 point last year, which I'll probably never get over unless we do it this year. But even through the hardest challenges, I think my brother and I, we're never too far removed from the context of like, we were just kids playing in the backyard, like obsessed over this sport. And like, we're doing this now. And like, we're taking our own shot at doing something. It's like, yeah, it's a pretty special thing for us.
Does this particular position you're in now come with an added weight to it because you're in your hometown? You've returned to Greece. You're with your brother. Does it carry an added pressure for it to succeed compared to other roles you've had where you've maybe been, not in a negative way, but less emotionally invested than what you would be now because you are where you are?
Yeah, it does. I'm already an extremely competitive person and an extremely emotional person. And you know, I lived the ups and downs of Venezia FC and Marigiana in a way that was probably like unhealthy. but yeah, it means so much more now. Yeah. I'm in the place where my dad grew up. I'm in a place where now my family and friends are here, like, and the stakes are bigger than football. I think that's important to say. We want to get promoted to the first division. That's the first step that has to happen. The club hasn't been there for 17 years, and we think we have a really good chance to do that this year. But taking a longer term view, the highest goal of the club is a lot more than winning football matches. It's fundamental that we want to be a competitive first division football club. I think we have a really good plan and a really good chance to do that, not just to stabilize in the first division, but we want to be a club that within 3 or 4 years can start flirting with European places. It's ambitious but realistic, but I think what will make the biggest impact, and I think that's what my brother and I both think about, is we want to use the club to have an impact on people's lives and have an impact on society here. And part of the motivation in starting this project was we were kind of heartbroken with the way Greek football was going, and we wanted to have our say. And we see a path towards contributing to a repositioning of football in Greece that can have an impact on the field and also can have an impact on people's relationship to the game here in Athens, and I would say in Greece in general, by bringing a fresh point of view. Don't think about England, because I think football's place in culture and society in England is something much more intimate than a lot of other places in Europe or the rest of the world, as popular as football might be. But certainly in Italy, where I've worked, and in Greece, there's still a pretty archaic and kind of like narrow-minded mentality within football that kind of fails to bring like inclusivity and harmony into the environment. And significant parts of society as a result tend to get kind of like socialized away from the game, or that they consciously reject it, right? And, you know, that goes back to what I said before about, like, you know, football being a public good, and that means people have to have access to it, which means we need to organize football in a way where people feel included, not that they should be like turning away from it. And that kind of starts with certain people starting to like tear down, you know, barriers to entry and like shattering stereotypes and like starting to reposition things in a way where, you know, if the game tends to skew male, you want to do certain things to start bringing, you know, women into the game. If it skews towards like, you know, a couple of stereotypical profiles, you want to break that down and start allowing other people, you know, to come into the game. And so like, we're still a second division football club. We can't change the world overnight. But to the extent that we can control our environment and kind of take it step by step and gain increasingly influence, you know, through Greek football, we want to, you know, be a symbol of how things can be different and to start, you know, bringing people closer to football clubs and back to the grounds in a way where, like, and maybe I should have given this context before, but like in my dad's era, a lot of people here will talk about, yeah, in the 60s and the 70s, like football grounds, they were full. You could be a big club or a small club. You could be in Athens or you can be in a small town. They were full. First division, second division, even third. And it's just not that way anymore for so many different reasons. But part of it is the way football clubs and football in general have been like, you know, positioned and the way they relate to the public and who they're inviting and who they're consciously or subconsciously kind of turning away. Certainly one element of that is, let's just say kind of, I don't want to say hooliganism exactly. You know, is there an element of that? Yeah. But like, you know, in general, let's just say bad behaviors at stadiums like that pushes people away. You know, obviously England has had to manage that for decades and now has gotten it to a pretty good place where, you know, I think anybody can go to, whether it's a Premier League match, championship, and further down, like pretty much anyone can go to a match in England these days. They don't have to worry about really anything. You know, core things like that needed to be reevaluated in Greece. And I'm kind of ranting here because there's so many different aspects to this, but like we wanted our perspective in the conversation. We wanted our voices heard in this conversation because we thought there was so much potential to be better. And it kind of felt like it's the same actors doing the same things and nothing's ever going to change. In fact, it you know, if you keep just spinning your wheels like this, it might only just get worse. And we were like, this is going to be really hard, you know, buying a football club and like trying to climb the ladder and trying to go even beyond football and try to like talk to people about the way we see things and the way things is going to be like really hard. But who else is going to do it? We've been waiting around a long time for people to make things better and it hasn't gotten better. And I don't just think it's something that's a football issue. I think it's a societal issue. If we fix it, there's a societal good attached to it. So like, fuck it. Like, let's try to do something.
Going back earlier on into what you were pointing out there about the people that may be marginalizing the game and you wanting to then attract them, does that inform the marketing material that you produce to show a particular demographic that it is for them? For example, in a kit release, and you'll use like where they're shot, the context they're shot within, who's modeling the kit, etc. Is that what you're aiming for in that respect?
For sure. I mean, if that's the mission, and I just describe how people might view like the football environment and that it's kind of like a closed environment. Like in my communication, I'm going to have to find a way to get you to suspend your preconceived notions and like give me a fresh look. I have to achieve that. And obviously that's not going to come by speaking the way football clubs have always tended to speak. I'm not going to get your attention that way. I have to do something different. And this is multifaceted, but the answer generally is yes. For example, it's one of the reasons why, at least to this point, now we're in our second season as Athens Khalifa FC, which means our second season of, you know, what you're referring to, which is like kit launches and stuff like that. I think across, yeah, so 6 kit releases, 5 out of 6 have featured a woman wearing the shirt, right? And yeah, that's partly because I want a woman in Athens to be able to envision herself not just wearing the shirt, but being in the environment. Like it's a signal that like you could be, you know, we are reaching out to you in a certain way. You know, it's obviously a lot more needs to happen. There's a lot more that does happen around like being more inclusive and like attracting people beyond like, you know, existing football fans, people who are really knowledgeable or passionate about football, and kind of starting to expand that. There's so much more that goes into it, but it's a subtle signal that like we see you, you know, we see you and you're included in this environment. But yeah, that is the, you know, that is part of the thinking behind it. And I mean, for me to communicate something new is happening here and to do it with such a small entity, this is a small club that just wasn't on the radar outside of the local neighborhood at all, right? So I don't have the existing, you know, I don't have the heritage or the followers or anything that like, you know, suddenly I change strategy and people see it. It's just not going to happen. I have to really fight for your attention. And visual communication is one of the most powerful ways to get you to stop scrolling or stop what you're doing and to just, and again, as I said before, to suspend your preconceived notions about what a football club is and pay attention to our story for a moment. And then hopefully we start, you know, that awareness turns to curiosity, turns to, you know, you bought a shirt, you bought a ticket, and maybe you bring a friend and suddenly you're in the environment, you know. And we try to do that in a way, socialize people in, that goes beyond, you know, winning and losing on something. It's fundamental that we want to get promoted and we want to go up the ladder. But, you know, we have a bad game or something like that, like that we're trying to create something that people see the vision and believe in the vision and want to be a part of it.
Did the club's pre-existing profile help in giving you license to make those radical changes in how you present the club? European clubs tend to be, regardless of where they're positioned, steeped in some kind of tradition. Did the club's initial standing kind of make it a blank canvas of sorts for you to work with, or did you feel some kind of weight and responsibility in shifting identity of a club that had been a part of a community?
Any football club is going to have an existing history and heritage. There's a community attached to it. So that's highly sensitive. What you try to do is, you know, honor tradition while taking a step into a new era. And it's a delicate balancing act. But one that, you know, I think with the right sensitivity, and the right care for details, you can manage. And some of it is an execution that everyone kind of gets to see. And some of it is the kind of stuff that that you don't see that means that we're, you know, on the ground talking to people, you know, in the neighborhood, people who love the club and stuff like that. And I think the fact that we have been here, we've been able to gain trust. I think even the people that were kind of uncomfortable with like a club rebranding and stuff like that, what they do see for sure is my brother and I are putting our heart into the club, and we already have tangible progress to show. And I think it feels like we have people's support now, which is really important to us. And we're just trying to move on from there step by step. We talked about nostalgia before. I mean, so like the past is fundamentally important to me. So you're always honoring that.
It's a lot easier to not do what you're doing and just, you know, not move across the other side of the world. Italy aside, I know you've been in Europe for a few years now, but let's just kind of distill it into Greece. It's easier not to move home, regardless of whether it's back to, you know, where your father's from and where you visited as a kid. It's easier not to identify and buy a club and run it and open your world to the inner workings of a club, from recruiting players, anything else that comes with it that I can't even think of right now. What is it in you and your brother, to extend that out, that makes this important, that gives you that the drive to take on a challenge like that?
Football has given me a lot from the time I was a kid, and the feelings it gave me, the inspiration it gave me, the way it connected me to people, to cultures, to the world, all the way up to my professional life. Football's given me a lot, and I kind of have felt this duty to kind of pay it back, to kind of like share that with people. When I arrived at Venezia, I mean, like, I think most people wouldn't have gone. I mean, I was fine in New York. I had a pretty set life. And I mean, today it probably sounds like a really exciting opportunity if Venezia FC calls you up and, you know, you get a job offer. But at the time, Venezia was coming out of their third bankruptcy in 10 years, and they were in Serie D. It's like not glamorous. And I left New York. I left my family, my friends, my girlfriend, my house, everything, to take on that project when it was, you know, at very humble beginnings. I had a vision of what it could be. I understood what it could be. But part of it was like, I understood what was happening to the game. And I was like, this club has been really beaten up, but I think it's really cool and beautiful. And like, I want to celebrate that. Like, I don't need to get a call from Manchester City. I don't want to work for Manchester City. Like, this small club called me up. They need help. There's a community here that is an interesting community. Like, people love this club. It's been on hard times. Like, yeah, okay, let's start here. Let's try to do something here. And like, I really put my heart into like celebrating a small club from a small town. And just like giving it its importance before it became famous, you know, before it was in Serie A, before people around the world were buying the jerseys, like, you're in Serie C? Okay, you're in Serie C. Let's celebrate that. It's actually cool. You know, like I hated the shame that came with like being a small club in a lower division. It's kind of like, I don't understand. What's embarrassing about that?
It's important to someone, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but also like, you know, everything comes with hard work and there are steps to it. And like, yeah, we're in Serie C today. And, you know, we ended up in Serie B. We ended up in Serie A. But like, you know, let's dream about that and let's take a shot. And until we get there, okay, we're in Serie C. Like, let's have fun doing what we're doing and celebrate what this club is and celebrate going to the ground together. And like, let's do that. Because I found it lacking in European football the way I found it. Yeah, the way I found it changing. And, you know, and as you said, it's kind of the same in Athens. Like, the easier decision would have been to just stay in Venice. To your point, the easy decision is definitely not to go seek out a third division Greek football club. But like, my brother and I feel a sense of duty. Football isn't curing cancer or saving the world. And certainly these days, things are a mess. You know, wars and unspeakable things, all this shit is going on. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about a game. But it's what I said before. It's a game that, like, even if it's just for a couple hours on Sunday, that makes you happy and connects you to people. It's important. And, like, you know, and to bring it into the context that I gave earlier, like, it's not just about, you know, Manchester City or, you know, Newcastle or PSG or, like, it's not about like you're buying your way into like the elite levels of the game and success. Like no, or whatever neighborhood you're in, like this game can contribute something to your life, you know? And if we like band together, like not just in one place, but as a league or as a country and like all have the same idea about what football can be, as I said, it's a societal game. So like, you know, we said, okay, like Greece is a place where, you know, we want to see people at the stadium. We don't want to see people fighting at the stadium. We want to see this game, like bring people together. We want to see footballers treated better. That was sensitive to my brother. We want to see them paid on time. We want to see them given chances. We want to see young players given chances. We want, you know, like whatever our ideas and values happen to be. And again, I don't want to like, you know, pat myself on the back or talk about how like we're, you know, like, I mean, we just saw a football community and really a society at large where things kind of just like weren't right. It was kind of broken and could have been better. And we knew there's going to be a huge sacrifice to even have a chance at making a contribution to making things better. And I emphasize contribution because who are we? You know, I mean, like Olympiacos has a bigger say than we do on the way things are, or not just say, but whatever they do has a bigger impact. The same with Panathinaikos, the same with AEK, the same with Balak. Those are the four, you know, traditional big clubs in the country.
Touching on what you said there about impact and the size of that compared to other clubs in Greece, it's not even important about how many people you can impact, is it? Just that you are impacting someone's life in a positive way, because you can't tell what the compound effect of that is going forward. And, you know, you change 100 lives in the suburb of Athens that you're in directly through the club. And they then take that into their everyday life and their home life, their work life, and that spreads out. You know, everyone's given off a slightly better version of themselves because of the experience they're having through Athens Kallithea. It's really warming to hear that using the game as a vehicle for societal change is at the heart of it all. And I'm just to stress, I didn't kind of for 1 minute think that it was anything other than that. I just had no idea. So it's a wonderful learning for me.
Well, some people might think it, you know, I mean, what gets the outside attention, not only from this project, but from Venezia as well. Like people just see Football Chip, you know, and like, that's cool. And like, you know, a football kit is, you know, it's heritage brought to the present day. It's, you know, it's a celebration of what a club has been and what they still want to be. It's a celebration of like a community of supporters and the nature of their support. And like, so that's, you know, we put a lot of like care into that. But yes, it, you know, sometimes it can be challenging because that gets so much of the attention and some of that attention is superficial. Like, that's not like the alpha and omega project, you know, like if anything, it's a way to like capture attention and like bring light on like what the actual mission is, you know? So yeah, you never really know what's getting through to people.
Can you tell me how this experience so far with your much more deeper rooted involvement in this club has impacted you as a person over the past couple of years?
I've had to become a better leader. I've had to kind of learn how to be strong for people through the growing pains and the challenges, and to, you know, help push people forward to, you know, until they suddenly start seeing the light of like where we could potentially go, and kind of like, you know, exercise a lot of patience through that process. I don't know. It's hard to say because I still feel like I don't know where this is going to go and like, you know, where we're going to be in 2 years or 5 years or what. And, but I guess if the question was how it's changed me, like, and I don't know if it's changed me exactly or how it might've changed my perspective, but I guess maybe my perspective might've changed a little bit in the sense of like, even though we're really ambitious and like I want to see European football in a few years and I want to see the stadium full and I want to see, you know, I just want to see the whole environment different and all that stuff. Like knowing that that can't happen overnight, I think to just kind of like try to appreciate the journey, like while it's happening, and to really appreciate like the small victories and the individual lives impacted, like, you know, a player that a couple of years ago was playing in a super small team and was like, you know, really struggling to, you know, take care of his family, and the fact that we were able to like change that kid's life. And like, he was, you know, thanking us the other day in a text message, like to stop and say that matters a lot. You know, before we get to the big stuff, like, let's just focus on the fact that that matters a lot. Let's like appreciate it, you know, and let's just like keep doing that, you know, while we're kind of working on the big stuff, you know, try to, I guess, continue to humanize, the project and the game.
Thanks, Ted. I really appreciate that. Really appreciate you spending the time with me today and giving clearly well thought out and honest answers there. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it's great work that you're doing. It's great to hear that people are at the kind of core of what you're trying to achieve over there, and learn that community is obviously really important to you and what you're doing. 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity to share our story.
Speak soon, mate. Take care.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button, and I'll see you next time.